Economic Divide.
The U.S. is in a recession. The U.S. is not in a recession. The U.S. will be in a recession. So, what is the deal? Well, some say that it is already. Others say that it will be in this year, 2023. And then some others are predicting a soft landing. So, which one of these scenarios will be the case? That's what we're going to find out in this edition of Economic Divide, because the U.S. economy going into a recession does matter for its impact on the world economy. Some of the highlights of this program coming up is the U.S. recession for the year 2023. The odds, 70% demand forecasts have been slashed and inflation projections have been trimmed. All the signs that the U.S. will be in a recession for the year 2023. Some of the highlights there of that particular topic. Then we move on to GDP growth, another highlight. It's been said to average a paltry 0.3% only. Consumer spending will barely grow, and that accounts for two-thirds of the GDP in the U.S. Don't forget that. And another highlight coming up in this program, recession factors that we called it. Well, you have surging interest rates, you have high inflation, another sign of recession, and also the end of fiscal stimulus and weak export markets all contribute to recession. The U.S. economy is going through a tough time. Economists say there is a 7 in 10 likelihood that the U.S. economy will sink into a recession this year. There are now worries that the economy may be heading towards a more pronounced slowdown. According to surveys, the recession probability was up from 65% in November and has more than doubled over the last 6 months. That's mainly due to last year's aggressive rate hikes by the Federal Reserve. Believe several factors are involved here: surging interest rates, high inflation, the end of fiscal stimulus, and weak export markets abroad have all contributed to the weakening of the U.S. economy. Officials at the Federal Reserve say that they will hike rates more than they initially expected over time. That is because officials want to tame the rising levels of inflation. Inflation readings from the UK and the Eurozone also factored into fears of an economic slowdown. Meanwhile, released data show that U.S. retail sales fell by the most in a year in December, pulled down by declines in purchases of motor vehicles and a range of other goods. That puts consumer spending and the overall economy on a weaker growth path heading into 2023. Now that 2023 is here, it remains to be seen when the recession is actually going to hit.
We are seeing a slowing in the economy and in demand that's appropriate and necessary to transition from rapid growth and recovery from a serious job shortfall to now a very strong labor market. We need to see a slowdown in growth. We are seeing that. I do believe there's a path by which we maintain a strong labor market like that.
It's time now for the social media posts of this program. I'm not going to lie to you. Practically most of the posts that we went through, almost every other one, said that the U.S. was in a recession by the end of 2022, and that for the year 2023, it will definitely be in one. So let's get started. First post: in the U.S., high inflation and aggressively hiking interest rates caused looming recession in 2022. What will the economy be like in 2023? The Economist warns the risk of a recession in the U.S. Economy will be high. Next up, a 60-40 portfolio of U.S. stocks and bonds in 2022 would have yielded the worst performance in a century. The U.S. will have a huge recession in 2023. Americans are so clueless, though, supporting a proxy war against Russia. Next post: every U.S. recession has been preceded by at least one of the following: oil shock, inverted yield curve, Fed tightening cycle. The year 2022 had all three. Then, the six-month rate of change of the leading economic index has a perfect track record of forecasting recessions. Says the LEI indicator tells us that a recession is right here, right now. And then finally, in answer to the previous tweet, we picked this one, which said we met the definition of a recession after the first two quarters. Our energy exports are the main driving force behind a positive third quarter. We are in a recession, but it is being masked. Okay, so it's being masked. Let's find out what our guest thinks about this. Let me see who we have. We have David Hungerford, an author and economist, who joins us as a first guest here on Economic Divide. David Hungerford, welcome to the program. So let's take a look at the prediction, 70% prediction that the U.S. will experience a full recession for the year 2023. Economists are predicting a 70% chance of that happening. That's according to the latest survey that Bloomberg gave out. Do you agree with Bloomberg? Do you think that based on the stats, the U.S. will be in a recession for the year 2023?
How are we doing? Okay, well, the United States already is in a recession. It's been fobbed off as a pandemic. But in fact, the United States went into a rather serious recession in Q1 2020. And at that time, the cause was an enormous overburden of household debt, mortgages, student debt, credit card loans, car loans. It was over $16 trillion, which comes out to, around $200,000 of debt, household debt per family in the United States. Roughly speaking, whereas the median household gross income is only $69,000, and it's simply impossible to carry, $200,000 of debt against, gross income of $69,000.
All right. Let me introduce our next guest. We have Robert Brusca, who joins us. He is a chief economist at Fact and Opinion Economist. Robert Brusca, welcome to Economic Divide. The median estimates see gross domestic product averaging just 0.3% next year, which includes a annualized 0.7% decline in terms of the figures we have for the second quarter. And then you have flat readings for the first and third quarters. Consumer spending, which accounts for about two-thirds of the GDP, that's a huge chunk, is projected to barely grow in the middle half of the year, this year that we're in. Why would the U.S., the world's alleged number one economy, experience such paltry numbers?
Yeah, I think a recession is coming. I think the percentages are, roughly what you'd expect from economists at this point. Some of the early data, even over this past week, have been quite disturbing, with personal consumption expenditures declining for the second month in a row, and with an extremely weak reading out of the Fed survey for manufacturing in the New York region, and another relatively weak one out of the Philadelphia region. It looks like the economy is headed for recession. But so far, it's also true that it has not affected the job market. The unemployment rate remains at a cycle low. Jobless claims this last week went down below 200,000, which is an extremely low level. And so we continue to get very mixed signals on the economy. Some things saying that the economy is getting very weak, and other things saying the economy is almost unaffected.
It's time now for the InfoNews section of the program. This section obviously is dedicated to news that we gather from around the world that we deem to be important. We pick four of them. First off, in a subject that is somewhat related to this program, it is very much related to this program, and it's about layoffs in the United States, and in particular, tech layoffs, tech for technology. Google, Microsoft, Amazon, and other tech companies have laid off more than 70,000 employees for the last year. Layoffs come as tech companies are cutting back on spending, and also rising inflation is curbing consumer spending. So this particular topic, just so you know, is so vast in its impact, we decided to actually dedicate a program to it, which will be coming up probably in a couple of weeks' time, so do watch out for that. Taking a look now at the next topic, EU-China relations. In particular, we're looking at a stance that France actually took when it comes to China, where he said China cannot be out China must be in. France is saying that it's diverging with the U.S. on ties with Beijing. The United States has taken a confrontational approach, how France sees it, and a lot of other people in countries. Well, the EU has looked at striking a balance when it comes to China. The French President Emmanuel Macron has said, we don't want to oppose China, we want to engage with China. We want China to obey by the same rules. We'll have to wait and see how that pans out, but it looks like the EU wants to obviously keep that relationship going. A topic that comes up next is something that we have focused on quite a bit. It's called de-dollarization, and this comes from Saudi Arabia, where it said they are now open to the idea of trading in currencies besides the U.S. dollar. And the headline read, does this spell doom for the greenback? Because it's the first time in 48 years that Saudi Arabia has said something like that. Now, Saudi Arabia's comments are the latest signal that powerful nations across the world are actually moving ahead, maybe based on this particular piece of news that says it's plotting. Well, countries are moving ahead with a de-dollarization of the global economy. I'm not too sure plotting would be the word, because if it is, then it shows that this has been in the works for quite some time, which is very well possible. And finally, our topic comes out of the U.S., where there have been lots of bankruptcies that have been reported, U.S. lender bankruptcies in particular, where lenders are starting to go bankrupt with the new mortgages, which is a signal, now down 47%. And the question now arises, could this one factor trigger the worst surge of failures since the 2008 financial crisis? You have new mortgages that were down 47% in the third quarter of 2022 compared to the year before. And that is the biggest annual drop in 21 years. Those four topics were what we picked for this section of our program called Info News. Please do send us your ideas or topics related to the economy. We would appreciate it very much.
Listening to Economic Divide. This series looks at the financial health of the economies around the world and its impact on countries. You can listen to Economic Divide on Mondays and Tuesdays on IRIB English Radio.
Time now for our in-depth section of the program. Now, in this section, we need to take a look at the U.S. economy in terms of different factors that we deemed important relative to other economies around the world, which is another focus of this in-depth section, but also as to why we are saying that the possibility of a recession is actually here for the U.S., especially in this new year. Now, first up, let's take a look at recessions in the U.S., that have happened in the past. I mean, it's worth taking a look at these recessions and how long they lasted in the U.S. Now, according to how we define a recession, the U.S. did experience a recession back in the year 2022, last year, since it experienced two consecutive quarters of GDP contraction. Now, in February of 2020, and of course, the relative times. Next, in terms of the recession for the year 2023, now, this is why we even came up with this program. Economists are saying that there is a 7 in 10 likelihood that the U.S. economy will sink into a recession for this year. From June until now, the odds of the U.S. will be in a recession have grown. This is for the year 2022 in terms of the surveys that they took, and that month after month has increased. Now, because of this projection, obviously it has had its ripple effects. For example, CEOs, they have been on the move. About 39% of the CEOs have actually implemented a hiring freeze, while 46%, well, they are considering downsizing their employee base during the next 6 months. So for the next 6 months of this year, that's what's going to be happening. Now, another estimate that we took a look at is a gross domestic product. Well, for the U.S., it's averaging a paltry 0.3% next year based on the projections that have been made. That includes an annualized 0.7% decline in the second quarter, and also flat readings in the first and third quarters. So things are not looking that great based on those indicators. Now, in the meantime, consumer spending, that's important to take a look at. Consumer spending accounts for about two-thirds of the U.S. GDP. That is projected to barely grow. And when it's going to grow, well, the projection is in the middle half of this year, so another 6 months to go. And then finally, here are some raw indicators visualized in one lump sum. U.S. savings, the lowest since the year 2008, 4.4%. It has decreased. Crypto losses, $2 trillion. Ouch, that hurts. Taking a look at credit card debt at 20%, you're looking at about $1 trillion for U.S. households. I think that averages roughly about $200,000 per household or so. Then inflation standing at 10% as of now, and then mortgage rates, which have doubled. Let's find out what our guests think about this. First up, we'll bring back David Hungerford. He's an author and economist. David Hungerford, welcome back to Economic Divide. So we just went over some indicators for the U.S., but really the U.S. is facing big headwinds when you take a look at interest rates, high inflation, the end of fiscal stimulus, weak export markets abroad, just some. Businesses have turned cautious about adding inventories and also about their hiring. When do you think things are going to turn around for the U.S.?
I don't think any end is in sight. The economic difficulties that you mentioned are by no means confined to the United States. I think every developed industrial economy in the world is in this shape. I think China's in terrible shape also. You know, they've had these lockdowns, you know. Lockdowns always stand for keeping people under control in the face of economic crisis. So you have, you know, we're looking at something that's very widespread around the world. And at this point, I would say that no end is in sight.
All right. Very well. Thank you for that. Let me now bring back our guest, Robert Bruska, who's the chief economist, the fact and opinion economist, who rejoins us. Robert Bruska, welcome back. The U.S. economy is facing a whole lot of challenges. Interest rates is one of them. Of course, you have high inflation, which is still not seen cooling down, even though there have been some signs that it is. But the end of fiscal stimulus is said to be another problem. And, of course, the exports. I mean, you know, you have countries that rely on U.S. exports, and that's not happening from the U.S., but based on factory production declining also. When do you think things are going to turn around for the U.S.?
Right. Well, these are all the classic symptoms that you have or characteristics that you have as the economy goes into recession and spends time in recession. And, you know, nobody ever knows how long a recession is going to be. You know, an average recession is probably something less than a year. We've had them much longer than that. How long this one is depends on how the Fed chooses to fight inflation. There are some people at the Fed who want the Fed to raise interest rates more sharply and to push inflation back down relatively quickly. However, there are other people who think that the Fed needs to slow down to keep interest rates about where they are, and then to hold interest rates at the level that they are now for a longer period of time and to slowly grind inflation down. So the grind inflation down path will be one that will cause the economy to underperform for a longer period of time. If we have higher interest rates in the near term, it's more likely that we'll have a somewhat sharper recession and that we will reduce inflation more quickly.
Retail sales have plummeted 1.1% last month, which marked the biggest drop since December 2021. The Fed's Beige Book report, which was released, described consumer spending as increasing slightly. The high inflation continued to reduce consumers' purchasing power, particularly among low and moderate income households. Sales at auto dealers fell 1.2%. Receipts at service stations tumbled 4.6%. Online retail sales dropped 1.1%.
The Fed last year raised its policy rate by 425 basis points from near zero to a 4.25% to 4.50% range. That is the highest since late 2007. A separate report from the Fed showed manufacturing output dropped 1.3% in December. This was the largest decline since February 2021. Most economists expect the economy will slip into a recession by the second half of this year.
As shown in our summary of economic projections, the median projection for real GDP growth stands at just 0.5% this year and next, well below the median estimate of the longer-run normal growth rate. Despite the slowdown in growth, the labor market remains extremely tight, with the unemployment rate near a 50-year low. Job vacancies still very high, and wage growth elevated.
But some hope that moderating inflation could discourage the Fed to stop raising interest rates. U.S. inflation rate is at 6.45% compared to 7.11% last month and 7.04% last year. This is higher than the long-term average of 3.27%.
When it comes to the U.S. economy, given its size first, then its integration with the world financial system, it is obvious that a recession there will impact the entire world. Yet, it would be premature to talk about its impact without looking at the world as a whole. If the U.S. dips into a long period of sluggish growth, emerging markets are going to struggle. Major exporters to the U.S., such as China, Mexico, and Canada, would feel pain if U.S. demand weakened for a prolonged period of time. Meanwhile, the warning signs are there that the U.S. can't avoid a recession because the global economy is not doing that well either. The World Bank has warned global economy could tip into recession in 2023. It has slashed its 2023 growth forecasts to levels teetering on the brink of recession for many countries. It cited the impact of central bank rate hikes to tame inflation as the reason, along with the Ukraine conflict. In its previous Global Economic Prospects report in June 2022, the bank had forecast 2023 global growth at 3%. Another world financial institution, the IMF, has also forecast a global recession, but the forecast was gloomier and more dire than other projections. It said not only would half of the European Union be in a recession, one-third of the world would face recession in 2023. It said that the main engines of global growth, the United States, Europe, and China, are experiencing weakened activity. This graph points to the growth or lack of it by these countries that accumulate the most sales and are the engines of world growth. The U.S. stood at 0.5%, the euro area at no growth, flat, and China's growth to be 4.4%. The previous world growth is also cited here to put things into perspective. The International Monetary Fund also said that a severe fragmentation of the global economy could reduce global economic output by up to 7% after decades of increasing economic integration. It added that the losses could reach 8 to 12% in some countries if technology is also decoupled. And finally, to round off our dismal and gloomy outlook, there is another factor that poses the biggest threat or risk for the world, as if our previous facts were not enough. A World Economic Forum survey of global risk specialists found that failure to tackle climate change and environmental degradation dominate the ranking of top risks facing the planet over the next decade. It concludes that current-day challenges, including the rising cost of living, persistent energy and food supply crunches, and heavy national debts, threaten to thwart the collective will and cooperation needed to address such problems. Okay, that's the end of this segment of the program.
We've reached the end of the program, so after all of this, is the U.S. in a recession or not? Well, as of Monday, January 23, Reuters reported that U.S. manufacturers probably entered a recession in the fourth quarter of 2022. But when you have massive layoffs happening, like in the tech sector that we mentioned before, rising interest rates, which slows down purchasing from homes to essential items, with stock markets losing ground after disappointing sales records that they had. U.S. data on corporate earnings, that all points to the fact that the U.S. will be in a recession, if it's not already, for the year 2023. So the recession will be there. Thanks so much for tuning in to this edition of Economic Divide. It was great having you with us. I hope you enjoyed it. From Mikhail Tahoe and the team, it's goodbye until the next Economic Divide.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en. Under the starry sky of the desert, from the very heart of evergreen forests, with the radiance of silver-colored sand, in the midst of proud mountains, closer, Iran,
hello, I am Mitra, an Iranian nature traveler. To know more about the wonders and beauties of magnificent Iran, keep me company. Pardon me, Professor. I have a question.
Yes, please.
I have been studying on tourism topics for my presentation at the university. I prefer to talk about Iranian and Islamic monuments. For example, mosques.
That's great.
By the way, do you have a suggestion in this regard? A unique place, for example.
Then what about the Jame Mosque of Darab?
You mean the mosque with four minarets?
Yes, that's it.
Thank you. So I don't waste time to take a trip there. The Jame Mosque of Darov is a historical mosque which dates back to the Seljuqid era. This mosque is located in the city of Darab, Fars province, southern Iran. This historical mosque is unique regarding its architecture and the way the shabistans and minarets are built. The Jame Mosque of Darab is the only mosque in Iran which has four minarets. The main structure of the mosque is made of bricks like other structures of the Seljuqid era. This mosque is registered in Iran's National Heritage List. I have to get off the bus. Here we are in Darab. I came a long way to get here, but it's worth it. One of the advantages of traveling by bus is that you can see different cities and villages on your way. Well, there are a few blocks to the mosque, and I prefer to take a walk to my destination. Okay, I was saying, one of the wonders of Iran is undoubtedly its unique Islamic architecture, which is especially seen in the mosques. I love this style of mosques architecture. What is interesting for me about the architecture of mosques is these structures' smart symmetry. Blue tiles, the design of minarets, domes, and Quranic calligraphy on the walls. Unique! The arched vaults at the entrances of shabistans of the mosques make me feel good, giving me a positive energy, a mystic sense. I can't describe it properly. To details, I should say that this mosque, unlike other mosques, has four minarets. And unlike other minarets, this mosque's minarets are not circular. What attracts me more to it is the big area around the mosque with palm and orange trees. Beautiful! This mosque is actually the oldest structure of the city of Darab, which dates back to late Seljuqid era. Although It went through major reconstruction during the Safavid rule. Ooh, it's a long time ago. Let's enter the mosque. I feel curious to know how it looks like. I have heard that inside the mosque has a rectangular shape which must be very spectacular. What is interesting for me about it is the mihrab. It's simple, unique, and admirable. Oh, the light which has illuminated the interior area is the reflection of sunlight on the green glasses of the roof. Oh, the architecture of the structure is designed for warm and cold seasons of the year. Let me take some photos. And there is another attractive place which I have to visit. Let me get out of here. Yes, here we are in the outer area of the mosque again. Just at the feet of the minarets, there is a gate which leads to a staircase by which you can go up. Oh, the stairs are thin and the ceiling is short. So it's a little hard to go up. But it's possible. Anyway. Oh, here I am. There are two gates, which one of them is opened to the roof and the other one leads to the minarets. And I want to go on the roof. Okay, I am here on the roof. I can see the entire city. Oh God, look at those pretty palm and orange trees. I love them. Iranian architecture is perfect.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. What you heard was an IRIB English radio program.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints
همه با وجود غده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم
All of us are opposed to the cancer's tumor, Israel.
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
Men and women as human beings are completely equal in Islam. This is the part of the speech delivered by the leader of the Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Ali Khamenei, meeting with hundreds of prominent Iranian women in the Imam Khomeini Hosseiniyah on January 4, 2023. As I mentioned previously, if you read the books about the wives of the martyrs, love and serenity can be clearly seen there. One can also see how this man, who has made his way to the middle of the battlefield, whether in the holy defense, in defeating the holy shrines, or in the other difficult fields, finds calm next to his wife. His mental turmoil abates, and love keeps him on his feet and gives him courage and strength so that he is able to carry on with his work. So, this is what a woman is like as a wife. She is a source of tranquility. She is a source of love, calm, and such things. Now, I have already mentioned this about tranquility, and made from it its mate, that he might find comfort with her. This is a verse from the Holy Quran. In another verse, it is stated, He created for you mates from your own selves, that you may take comfort in them, and he ordained affection and mercy between you. The Holy Quran, chapter 30, ayah 21. Affection means love. Mercy means kindness. Love and kindness are exchanged between a husband and wife. This is what a woman's role is as a wife. It is not a small role. It is a very important role. It is a very big role. This is related to marital life.
دنیای اسلام یک نسخه امروز دارد و اون اتحاد.
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
With regard to motherhood, the role of a woman is a role where she gives life. A woman produces beings which come from her. This is how it is. She is the one who carries. She is the one who gives birth. She is the one who feeds. She is the one who looks after the child. The lives of human beings are in the hands of mothers. Children owe their lives to their mothers. The love that the Almighty God has placed in the mother's heart for child is unparalleled. There is no other life like it or that is equal to it in quality. She provides life. Generations continue. Mothers bring about the continuation of generations. It is due to motherhood that the human race continues.
Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done for me through all my years I've been lost. You guided me from all the ways that were wrong. Indeed, you gave me hope. Oh, Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done for me.
This is IRIB English Radio.
IRIB English Radio, with you every single moment.
In the limelight.
In addition to the Palestinians of the occupied West Bank, Gaza Strip and the occupied territories, thousands of people in some Islamic countries attended rallies to condemn the brutal crime of the Israeli regime, murdering 9 Palestinians in the Jenin refugee camp on Thursday, 26th of January. We take a look at some of the world media's coverage of this issue. Please stay with us. The Quds News Network reports, Israeli regime launched airstrikes on the besieged Gaza Strip just a day after martyring at least 10 Palestinians in the occupied West Bank, prompting the Palestinian resistance to fire rockets at the occupied territories in retaliation. The Palestinian Information Center said Israeli warplanes raided areas of the West Bank and southern Gaza Strip, including posts belonging to the Palestinian resistance, on Thursday night, 26th of January, and Friday, 27th of January, at dawn. Palestinian citizens' homes have been severely damaged as a result of the violent Israeli airstrikes. In retaliation, the Palestinian resistance responded to the aggression by firing retaliatory rockets at illegal Israeli settlements surrounding the besieged Gaza Strip. Israeli media confirmed that at least 8 rockets were launched from the Gaza Strip. The Israeli military claimed that the rockets were intercepted by missile defenses and said there were no injuries reported. Security sources in Hamas said there had been 15 strikes on the enclave with no injuries reported so far. Hamas says Izzeddin al-Qassam brigades confirmed that its air defenses responded to the hostile Israeli warplanes in the skies of the Gaza Strip with surface-to-air missiles and anti-ground missiles. The Israeli air raids were carried out a day after 10 Palestinians were martyred in separate Israeli attacks in the occupied West Bank. 9 Palestinians lost their lives following a raid on Jenin refugee camp in the northern part of the occupied West Bank. Israeli forces gunned down a 10th Palestinian during clashes in the wholly occupied city of Al-Quds. In Jenin, more than 70 Israeli armed vehicles and hundreds of Israeli soldiers stormed a flashpoint city and a neighboring refugee camp, leaving the residents and popular Palestinian resistance groups with no choice but to defend themselves and confront the occupation forces. Among those murdered by the Israeli military in Jenin was a 61-year-old Palestinian woman identified as Majeda Obeid, who was martyred in her home while performing prayers. According to analysts, the Palestinian resistance has a legitimate right to defend itself in the face of Israeli aggressions that have been ongoing for decades, with major escalations taking place since the far-right extremist regime headed by Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu took office in late December. Press TV's website has also covered the same story and tells us more. Thousands of Palestinians attended rallies to condemn the brutal crime of the Israeli regime in assassinating 9 Palestinians in the Jenin refugee camp on Thursday, 26th of January. Video footage shows Palestinian people chanting slogans against the Israeli occupying forces after Friday prayers on 27th of January at Al-Aqsa Mosque in the occupied city of Al-Quds. Furthermore, hundreds of people in the Gaza Strip and in Rafah took to the streets to slam the Israeli atrocities. A similar demonstration was also held in the Jordanian capital Amman after Friday prayers, with hundreds of people taking part. 9 Palestinians lost their lives following a raid on the Jenin refugee camp in the northern part of the occupied West Bank. At least 20 Palestinians were wounded in this incident, including unarmed civilians. Jenin refugee camp resident Umm Yusuf al-Sawami said homes were hit during the raid. Windows, doors, walls, and even the refrigerator, everything was damaged by the bullets. This is while the Israeli regime enjoys the support of Western countries, especially the United States, which observers believe has further emboldened the regime to continue its decades-long crimes against innocent Palestinians. Meanwhile, 3 United Nations experts, including Special Rapporteur on the Situation of Human Rights in the Palestinian Territories, Francesca Albanese, deplored the Israeli violence. They said none of this violence would occur if Israel were to end its illegal half-century-old occupation immediately and unconditionally as required by international law. The experts added, the international community cannot and should not tolerate what appears to reflect Israel's deliberate policy and practice of using lethal force without regard for limits set by international law. Various countries have also, in a statement or by holding protests, slammed the Jenin massacre, including the Islamic Republic of Iran, Yemen, Saudi Arabia, Turkey, Egypt, and Bangladesh. Turkey's Anadolu news agency has also covered the same story and tells us more. An independent Irish member of the European Parliament has criticised the European Union for its silence on Israeli crimes, as the Tel Aviv regime continues to commit atrocities against Palestinians across the occupied territories. Mick Wallace, an Irish MEP, a member of the European Parliament, made the remark in a post on his Twitter account on Saturday, 28th of January, after the European Union released its Action Plan on Human Rights and Democracy 2022, in which there was no mention of the plight of Palestinians. Mick Wallace denounced the annual report as selective, noting that it has ignored the persecution and murdering of Palestinians by the Israeli regime. Pointing to the fact that at least 150 Palestinians were martyred by the Israeli regime forces last year, he lamented the bloc's failure to mention the issue in the report. Mick Wallace added, "How can we allow crimes to be committed against Palestinians every day and remain silent? These crimes would not have happened without our complicity." On Thursday, 26th of January, the Palestinian Authority, headed by Mahmoud Abbas, said it had decided to suspend security coordination with the Israeli regime in the occupied West Bank in reaction to the Jenin massacre. A statement issued after a Palestinian Authority meeting read, "In light of the repeated aggression against our people and the undermining of signed agreements, including security, we consider that security coordination with Israeli occupation no longer exists as of now." The latest massacre in Jenin brought the total number of Palestinians martyred in Israeli fire so far in 2023 to 28. And that includes 5 Palestinian children. Israeli forces regularly conduct raids on various cities in the occupied West Bank on the pretext of detaining what they call wanted Palestinians. The unwarranted raids usually lead to violent confrontations with Palestinian residents. Over the past few months, Israel has ramped up attacks on Palestinian towns and cities throughout the occupied territories. As a result of these attacks, dozens of Palestinians have lost their lives and many have been arrested. Most of the raids have focused on Nablus and Jenin, where Israeli military have been trying to stifle a growing Palestinian resistance in the occupied cities. The United Nations marked 2022 as the deadliest year for Palestinians in the occupied West Bank in the past 16 years.
Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Rubashavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Poreza, London.
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Saeed Aminolemi, Kabul.
Shahana Bhatt, Indian administered Kashmir.
Round the world with reporters.
Yemenis are urging their government to take decisive action to end the Saudi-led blockade on Yemen before the month of Ramadan begins. Due to Saudi Arabia's strangling blockade, food, fuel, and gas prices increased drastically during the holy month. Here at the Al Sanaa market, where many Yemenis do their shopping, customers said they want their government to adopt measures that will resuscitate Yemen's economy and end the continuous price hikes.
The strangling blockade is why food prices are increasing. When prices increase, it makes life harder for business owners.
We ask our government to improve our ballistic missile capability because it is our missile capability that will break the siege.
According to Mohammed Miftah, who is an advisor to the president of Yemen's Salvation Government, the cabinet's main task is to keep Yemen's battered economy afloat in the midst of a brutal war.
The government's main task, given the current circumstances, is to provide essential services like electricity, water, and building roads so people can travel. It's true, prices remain high. However, in the near future, the government aims to provide services at a lower price. In general, the main cause of the surge in prices is the Saudi blockade.
Mohammed Miftah says, despite the surge in prices, the Saudi-led coalition's war on Yemen's economy is leading to nowhere.
The enemy was hoping to strangle Yemen's economy completely by preventing all fuel and gas from entering Yemen. We have successfully foiled this plan, and now fuel and gas are available, even though they're slightly overpriced. The important thing is that they're available, which is more important.
For the time being, the Yemeni government shows a willingness to engage in peaceful political dialogue to end the war. However, much of the public has lost hope in the peace process. Yemeni people are calling on the Salvation Government to break Saudi Arabia's siege on the country before the holy month of Ramadan. Sana'a has called on Riyadh to lift the blockade multiple times. The kingdom has so far refused the requests, which means Yemen's next option could be a military one. Yusuf Maudi, Sana'a.
The memory of the rape and murder of pedestrian Sarah Everard in 2020 by then Metropolitan Police Officer Wayne Cousins is seared on everybody's mind here. The police commissioner at the time, Cressida Dick, called it a case of a few bad apples in the force and promised action to weed them out. She was soon forced to resign, leaving a police force in crisis. The latest scandal to rock the mat, David Carrick, an officer from the same unit as Wayne Cousins, pleading guilty to tens of offenses, including rape against 12 women over nearly two decades. The response from the new commissioner, Mark Rowley, an apology and the promise of a cleanup. Yet critics of the Metropolitan Police Force say they don't think that will solve the problem.
I think the proposition that it's just a few bad apples has been blown completely out the water. What we have in reality is a deeply systemized culture of misogyny and racism that speaks and exists at the very heart, the core of the Metropolitan Police Service. It is beyond reform. It is beyond saving.
The force Commissioner Rowley commands was placed under special measures last year after revelations of bullying, racial